Bruce Metzger is bringing together over 70 dealers of mid-century design to the 20th Century Cincinnati Show at the Sharonville Convention Center, February 22nd and 23rd. From their website, best known for its fantastic selection of furniture and lighting, 20th Century Cincinnati also features period, decorative objects, housewares, pop culture, memorabilia, and an important fashion element. Also featured during the show is a special exhibition entitled Modernist Mud, Ohio Formed and Fired, featuring Ohio potteries including Roseville, Cowan, and Cincinnati's Rookwood Art Pottery. With us in the studio is Bob Batchelor, who's writing a new book about the history of Rookwood pottery, due out in September. Welcome back to Around Cincinnati, Bob.
Thank you, Lee. Great to be here.
This is the 140th anniversary of Rookwood pottery, so I thought it'd be fun to focus on Rookwood's rich Cincinnati history. And it started a little before Thanksgiving Day, 1880. Tell us about the story of Rookwood.
The story of Rookwood is really pretty phenomenal, and it really was to become the gem of the Queen City. When Mariah Longworth, then Nichols, later to become Mariah Longworth Store, founded the company in late 1880, she had a very definite opinion about not only creating an art pottery, but creating art that would be considered home art. And that's one of the things that she called it. It was almost as if she had interior design in mind, because if we think back to the late 1880s, most people had almost nothing in their house that would be considered art of any form. So Rookwood was really at the forefront of that movement to decorate the home in the late 1800s.
The first Rookwood pottery was located in a renovated schoolhouse on Eastern Avenue, purchased by her father at a sheriff's sale. And is that building still standing?
No, that was kind of the far reaches of the suburbs of downtown at the time. And the problem with that Eastern Avenue schoolhouse was that it flooded. And there were a couple devastating floods in Cincinnati. And it was too small to begin with. As Rookwood began to grow, it was almost a necessity to find a new home. And what better place than perched up on top of Mount Adams? You couldn't be further from the river. There's not going to be any flooding, but it's sure a heck of a beautiful view.
And where did the clay come from?
They got most of the clay from Ohio initially, and then they started experimenting with clays from other regions as the science got more advanced. Something that people don't realize about Rookwood, it was like a high-tech startup company in 1880. They married science and technology and handmade crafts in a way that would almost be mind-blowing today. The science of pottery, particularly when you're trying to do it on a corporate scale, is pretty fantastic.
How many people were working on those glazes?
Rookwood had the first official glaze ceramicist scientist at that time, but the playing around with glazes and trying to understand kiln temperatures and things like that began with Mariah herself. People think, I think really irresponsibly, that she was some kind of dilettante just using her family money to found this pottery, but she was a serious person and she had a lot of ambition, and creating a company was one of them. And so she had spent almost an apprenticeship at a local pottery before she ever started Rookwood, which enabled her to really understand kiln temperature, the basic science of how to create glazes. And Rookwood would come to dominate pottery in the world in terms of its glazes. It's still what sets Rookwood apart today. The glaze things they're able to do then and now are sometimes mind-boggling.
And within a few short years, a little over 10 years, they started winning international awards.
Yeah, the first big win was in Paris in 1889, and that's almost fantastical when you think about it, because it's hard to imagine what world's fairs would be like because they're not a big part of society. But back then, this was, you know, 10, 12 million people from around the world. I mean, people would designate their entire years around world's fairs. So for Rookwood to win, then in 1889, they followed it up in 1900, receiving the Grand Prix at the Paris World's Fair. That really set Rookwood into the first tier. a company only initially about 10 years old, and then by their 10th year, they're winning major awards. They were beating other companies that had been around for hundreds or thousands of years. It was pretty phenomenal.
They got commissions from the big cities like Chicago and New York.
Yeah, they needed to find ways to enable the art pottery because only so many people could buy Rookwood art pottery back then. There were lines, production lines that were built out for everybody, so anybody could decorate their home with Rookwood. But the really finest Rookwood was really upper class people, wealthy people that could buy it. So they needed to find a way to stretch financially, and construction companies, architects, they didn't have anything the quality of Rookwood tile. So Rookwood got wholeheartedly into tile. One of the early wins was the New York subway system. So they started designing tile for there, and it took off from there. The problem for Rookwood was when you make handcrafted tile, it's expensive, and it became a challenge over time. We're unsure as historians whether or not Rookwood's tile ever really paid out the way they hoped. But there sure are some beautiful pieces of Rookwood in the public spaces around the country as a result of this.
Before the Great Depression, how many people were employed by Rookwood?
There were, I believe, upwards of 200. So it was a major employer for the city. I think more importantly was that I think if you say from about 1900 to 1930, Rookwood was known the world over, certainly across the United States in a way that we couldn't even fathom today. I mean, Rookwood was an iconic brand, probably as well known as Nike in its day. So it's a pretty interesting thing to look back on. It was the number one tourist destination, even in the late 20s and into the Depression era, when groups came to Cincinnati. An association would bring in 5,000 people. Their first stop would be Rookwood, even though the people visiting then didn't have any money to buy actual products. They started putting out things for like a dollar back then, but a dollar in the midst of the Great Depression could feed your family for a day. So it was a difficult decision for people to make.
Speaking of difficult, how did the Depression affect Rookwood pottery?
Well, like so many companies in American history, the Depression really cut the legs out from under Rookwood. They had taken on some debt, and then nobody really knew. I mean, we look back at the Depression as this kind of distinct entity, but when you think about the people who were living in that time, they had no clue. And the people running Rookwood understood business, but they were primarily artists first or arts administrators. They thought that if they put a little money into the company, they'd ride out the storm, it'd be a couple years, but they had no understanding of how deep and long it would end up being, and that really hurt the company. At some point, the financing dried up, and interestingly, in the 20s, certainly into the 30s, Rookwood is still creating some beautiful pieces. You can find those pretty much anywhere, but the company as a viable entity really began to struggle.
Would the 20s and 30s pieces be the ones that'll be on display at the 20th Century Cincinnati show?
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing to see during the modernist era, Art Deco, what kind of pieces that Rookwood artists created. If you kind of bookend that era, Billy Henschel is probably one of the most well-known. When you think of Rookwood and Art Deco, he's the person that comes to mind for people who know Rookwood. He not only created beautiful art pottery using very Art Deco, he had a thing for gazelles and some other flowers and things like that, but he also did some public installations that people can still see. So if you go over to Carew Tower and you look at the giant soaring flower Rookwood installation there, he created that. He also created the Tea Room, which is now Grater's Ice Cream at the Cincinnati Museum Center. So there are pieces of Henschel's career that still exist in the public space as well. Then on the other side of the 1920s, 1930s movement is Jens Jensen. His stuff will just blow your mind. I mean, your listeners should just Google Jens Jensen and see what kind of comes up. He really is, as his friend, Nobel Prize winning playwright George Bernard Shaw said, the quote, Picasso of America. And it is as if Picasso was creating his masterpieces on this curved clay surface. I mean, the talent level that it would have taken to create those kind of pieces on the clay body are just spectacular.
Was Jensen living here in Cincinnati when he was designing?
Yes, he was. Yeah, Jensen had a long career at Rookwood. Billy Henschel was at Rookwood from 1907 to 1939. Jensen was there from 1928 to 1948. So around 1928, before the Great Depression, before the Wall Street crash, I would have loved to be in the break room up in Mount Adams and just watch those two interact. I can't even imagine. I mean, it would have been like just the phenomenal creativity in the room probably would have given people goosebumps.
Over the years since 1934, there have been changes at Rookwood, and now the main store and factory is at 1920 Race Street, and it seems to be very productive.
Yes, today's Rookwood is really bringing that idea of modern luxury back into the work that it does. So if you go into Rookwood today, you will see hand-thrown pieces just spectacular and still handmade, the art pottery handmade, the architectural tile division at Rookwood is doing phenomenal things. I was just looking at a home installation. Somebody is remodeling a 1920s home and has laid out a Rookwood floor and fireplace, and it's stunning. Rookwood Tile now has the ability, if you came into them and said, we want to recreate the 1920s look, they could create tile that you would not be able to see with your eye. There was a difference. And on the other hand, they can also design a brand new bathroom, building, kitchen, whatever, in the latest designs because of that glaze and how beautiful the glazes are. The stuff they're doing today is really fantastic.
I was there a few weeks ago for Fiona's birthday party.
Yeah, and that was a heck of a party.
It was fun. Over 1,000 people were there. I got to go on one of the tours to see how Fiona's ice cream bowl was made, and it was fascinating to see all the different compounds that they used, to see the handwork. There are artisans sitting at tables working on each piece.
Yeah, it's great. You know, one of the things, Rookwood, as far as I can tell, I've had no historians refute me yet, but as far as I know, Rookwood was the first large manufacturing company in America founded and run by a female. And today it is still female owned. And even better yet, it's about 70 to 75% female employee, which is off the charts when you think about modern American manufacturing. I think with those Fiona bowls, which Cincinnati and the world has just taken by storm, same with Fiona corn, everybody loves Fiona and Rookwood loves creating Fiona because part of the proceeds go back to the zoo. It takes, I believe, 12 or 13 sets of hands to create those. I mean, in a world in which we love authenticity and we love handcrafted, Rookwood is still there doing it. It's what made them really the centerpiece of art pottery in America into the early 20th century, and it's still there today. So any listener who wants to really see the behind the scenes, the tours happen every week. You just have to make a reservation, and it's well worth your time. It's a fun way to spend a couple hours in the day.
And one fact that came out during the tour is Rookwood still owns the molds as well as the formulas for the glazes.
Yeah, I got the chance as I was researching the book to go down into the mold room with Micah Carroll, the CEO, and it's fantastic. I mean, if you're into pottery, it's almost like Willy Wonka or something. I held several molds that had been created during Rookwood's main heyday, and to think that Kataro or John Wareham and all these greats who really were the backbone of Rookwood had held those or had used them, created them. It was a great experience. And occasionally they do have tours that focus on those kind of historical avenues, and those are really popular. They sell out really fast.
Do you know of any anniversary plans that can be announced this fall?
You know, those are still in development. But I can tell you that everybody that I've talked to is really excited about this book because there's so much about Rookwood that a historian like myself now can dig in and find things. Most of the things we know about Rookwood are from books that were written 50 years ago. And I don't overturn a ton of that, but there are so many more avenues. There's so much more. And just the understanding of Mariah herself and her dedication and her commitment to Cincinnati really is a fascinating story in and of itself. I'll give you one tidbit. Mark Twain was a huge Rookwood fan, He stopped here several times. He bragged to his wife that he bought some Rookwood, and he did not like interior design. He didn't like decorating. He thought it was all humbug, but he made specific efforts to buy Rookwood and send it back to his home in Hartford. So lots of little tidbits like that. The book is illustrated, so it's 300 really great illustrations, images, pictures, but it's also about 200 pages of my text, deeply researched. So I think people are going to really enjoy it.
Sounds like it's going to be a wonderful book. Thanks for coming in tonight, Bob, and good luck with your book.
Thank you.
I've been in conversation with Bob Batchelor, who's writing a new book about Rookwood Pottery's rich history. You'll find a link to Rookwood Pottery, Bob Batchelor's book, and the 20th Century Cincinnati Show and their special pottery exhibition at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Lee Hay.